Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. Today I'm going to talk about a really important subject, and that is medical training for mountain biking. And what do you need to know and what equipment should you have to be able to help someone, including yourself, if someone had a traumatic injury on the trail? Now, the truth is what we do is a dangerous sport. Right? Like if you ride long enough, you're going to crash. For some of us, it was the very first ride out, right? But the old saying, like there's two types of riders, those that have crashed and those that are waiting to crash. I mean, that is true, right? You're going to crash if you are mountain biking. And if you crash enough or are around people that crash enough, eventually someone you are riding with, you or someone else, is going to get hurt on some level. Right, everything from just getting their bell rung a little bit, or a good little scratch that needs to get cleaned up and some attention when you get back, to traumatic injuries that are going to require medical professionals to come in and assist with getting this person out of there. And so these things are a possibility, and really, you're going to experience something on this spectrum if you ride long enough. So personally, I've been around a few bad injuries, including I was around when someone broke their neck, which was, really eye-opening experience. I've been around, there was a kid who fell off of a cliff, a 20-foot cliff near the trailhead. It was just some overhanging rock ledges, and he happened to climb up there and somehow fell down and was not in good shape from that. I've known riders who've had bad puncture wounds, including one guy who punctured his femoral artery with his handlebars. And so, I have broken myself off many times, on the bike. And so, and those are just, like I said, like the really kind of standout traumatic injuries, like just countless other smaller injuries between myself and people that I would ride with. And so it's something that I've been lucky enough to not have been put in a situation where the outcome was greatly affected in a negative way because I didn't have the knowledge and the skills and the equipment to help. And so, really that's just blind luck. And realizing that I needed to take control of that, like, yes, I need help from medical professionals, but the person who needs help, including myself, may need to be stabilized long enough for that help to arrive. And it would just be a terrible, terrible feeling to be standing there watching someone either die or end up, having to suffer a lot more than they needed to, and have the situation turn out worse than it needed to, simply because you don't know what to do. Or you don't have the equipment to do it. I mean, that's got to be a terrible feeling. I mean, I remember the kid that fell off the cliff, like standing there and just not knowing exactly what to do. And his parents are crying, and you can hear him crying, and it's just a really chaotic situation. And it was, like I said, it was a very helpless feeling standing there, going like, I don't really know what to do. Like, I'd really love to help, but the best thing I can do is at this point is, I don't know what to do. And so, eventually with that one, I went out and led the help in. I remember from some first aid training that I did back in the day that's something you want to keep in mind. I'll get to that as we get into how to handle these situations, but, making sure that, especially if you're off the beaten path, right? Like if you're at a trailhead that's off the main road or something like that, like having someone go back and meet the help so that they can lead them directly to where the help is needed, so they don't have to spend any time trying to figure out where they need to go, can make the difference between, that time factor is very important during a traumatic injury situation. And so, yeah, luckily I was able to think of something. I mean, I'm not saying I'm any sort of hero there with that, because I wish I could have done more, but at the time that's all that I knew how to do, but at least I knew how to do something. And so just realizing that, myself and really as a community, mountain bikers, we need to take greater responsibility for ourselves from the medical side when we are out riding. And again, this is not something that the industry talks about a lot. I mean, this isn't a comfortable subject to talk about, right? Like I'm not trying to scare anyone. I'm just trying to open people's eyes and minds to the very real possibility that you're going to end up having to deal with some sort of injury on the trail, and do you know what to do, and are you able to help? And so, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, people don't really think about when they say like, oh, I'm ready to help, or, you know, I'd help, is to be able to truly help in any situation. It takes more than just the desire to help. You also have to have the knowledge and the skills and the equipment needed to help. If you don't have those things, then all the desire in the world isn't going to put, you're not going to be able to help out any more than the person who has no desire and just, and doesn't want to help, right? So if you really want to help, then you're going to take it upon yourself to think about, okay, what kind of situations can I help out with? And this is, you know, the MTB warrior concept that I've been talking about lately, like at its heart, that's what this is what type of situations could you encounter? And are you the kind of person who's going to be able to bring the others back? Right. And so in this situation, we're looking at the medical side, like what do we need to know? What could we encounter? And what can we do to help in those situations so that we're ready to help out? And we truly can help rather than just sit there and wish that we could do more, which, like I said, is a terrible feeling. So the goal of this podcast, just to, you know, I am new at this. Like, I've been diving into this for the last few months and have done some, you know, some online courses and some, you know, in-person courses that deal with some of these things. And so this is, really, the goal is not to try to turn you into any sort of expert, because I'm not any sort of expert myself at this point. But really what I want to do is cover some general topics, including what's known as the MARCH algorithm for dealing with traumatic injuries, and that will hopefully spark some interest in people learning more about this. And so I'll share some resources that you guys can use. You know, there's a great lesson at Mountain Man Medical, free online you know, clinic or whatever you want to call it, where he takes you through the MARCH algorithm and explains it, you know, much better than I'm going to do here. So that's really like my number one recommendation, is go to mountainmanmedical.com and sign up for that free course and take that course. And that's going to take you from just so much further. If you've never heard of this and you've never really thought about this before, you know, you're not going to be an expert, right? But your knowledge is going to be 1,000 times greater than it was when it was nothing. Okay, so it can really help just kind of start the ball rolling in that direction. I found that to be a really good resource. And I'll also make some recommendations on equipment that you can carry. I did a Facebook Live that I posted on the blog on like tourniquets for MTB. And so just covered some basics of tourniquets. But tourniquets are, you know, something I'll touch on, but one of those really basic things that you can carry. They're not very expensive. They don't take up a lot of room. And if you need a tourniquet, you really need a tourniquet. It's one of those things that it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. And so, but anyways, I'll touch on some of the things that you can carry to help you out as well. So, and lastly, the goal of all of this is not to become a trauma medicine expert. It's simply to be able to help stabilize someone long enough for the real help to arrive. Like I said, what we do with mountain biking, a lot of times we are off the beaten path. If we are in a place where help is going to have to come in and find us and then get us out, or the person that needs help, if we have a severe injury situation. And so that time is valuable. Like, someone can, like I said, like die or have things go from bad to worse in the time that it takes for the help to get there. And so knowing a few things that I'm going to go over here to help stabilize that person long enough for the real help to get there, that's really all we're doing. That's that we're not becoming trauma medicine experts. No one's going to work in a MASH unit after this podcast or any of this stuff that I'm recommending. But you will be able to assess a situation and help stabilize someone if needed. And so at least to the best of your ability at that time. And remember, like every other skill, like, you have to practice this stuff. Like, you know, on the tourniquet post that I did, like, I showed you guys my training tourniquet. So I not only have several tourniquets stashed in different medical kits and places where I carry them, but I have dedicated training tourniquets so that I can practice with them. Because again, you don't want to practice with the tourniquet you're going to use in an emergency situation. You don't want to take the chance of it breaking or not working as effectively because it's been stretched out and used a few times. So having a dedicated training tourniquet is part of this MTB warrior lifestyle where, yeah, I'm not only going to be prepared, but I'm going to practice. Like, you're only as good as your skills, and your skills are only as good as your practice. So it's something else that you need to think about when we're going through this. But so first things first, before we even get into the march algorithm, you need to assess the situation and make sure that it is safe for you to help. Okay, you don't want to make the situation worse by adding in another person who needs help with, you know, being you. So from like someone starting to fall down a ledge and you rush to help them, not realizing like, oh crap, now you're starting to fall down the ledge and now two people got to be rescued. There was that story that came out about the hiker and the mountain biker, and the hiker stabbed the mountain biker. And if you have something like that, and there's someone who's still armed and aggressive in the area, and you go rushing in to help, and he thinks you're rushing to attack him, and all of a sudden he attacks you thinking he's trying to defend himself again, like, now you've made the situation worse. So you can't just go running headlong to help. That's the first thing that you need to know, is as badly as you want to help and as badly as someone looks like they need help, you have to assess the situation to make sure that it's safe for you first. You cannot make the situation worse by putting yourself in a spot where now you need help as well. So along with that, you need to make sure that someone has contacted help. It's easy for us to just start making assumptions. Like, there may be a bunch of riders around and you're the one who's has some training and some equipment, and you're able to start helping. And you may assume like, man, one of these people is probably called for help or is going to call for help. Don't assume anything. Like, point to someone, make eye contact, tell them, call for help, call 911. Or, if you're not visually seeing someone and hearing them calling for help so that you know for 100% sure that they are calling for help, you need to make sure that is happening and someone is calling, or if you're in an area where you can't get cell phone range, to get to where you can and you can contact help. And then also, like I mentioned earlier, that luckily as far as like I was able to do something to help, not that it was this, great thing, but remembering to have someone meet the help. So if help's coming your way, where can you meet them to help lead them directly to where the help is needed? Whether it's the trailhead or the main road, whatever that is, but just where is the area that you can meet them or someone can meet them and bring them directly in, so that they're not spending time trying to figure out where exactly do they go, because they may not be super familiar with the trail system or that area that you're at. Because again, a lot of times we're a little bit off the beaten path with what we do. So, but those two things, like making sure, well, really three things, making sure the situation is safe, making sure that someone is contacting help, and making sure that if possible, someone is meeting that help to bring them directly where the help is needed. Like, those are the preliminary things that'll get the ball rolling. And then you can start getting into this march algorithm. And so the MARCH is an acronym, right? Each one of the letters stands for something. And so, but it's a good way to remember the order of assessing a situation, and then what you can do at each step of the way. Because again, you don't think about it, but there is a hierarchy here. So for example, M, the first letter, stands for massive bleeding. And this is important because if someone's bleeding heavily, you have to stop it before they bleed out. And it may only be a few minutes. Like, if they've severed an artery, they may only have a few minutes before they're going to bleed out. So, you have to prioritize that, first and foremost, before you start worrying about some of the other things that you could. And again, like, looking for the massive bleeding. So you may have like a bad gash that looks really nasty, but it's not bleeding as bad as a puncture wound or you know, another wound is. And so don't go by what visually looks the worst or looks the nastiest. You know, someone may have a cut on their head, and those things can bleed like crazy, right? But that they're not going to bleed out for the most part from a cut on their head. Again, a big gash or something, you know, is a different thing. But, you know, you may, a cut on the head may be bleeding. And again, you're missing that they've severed an artery, or they have, like, you know, really bad bleeding in another area that is, you know, not going to stop as easy. And so just assessing where is the worst bleeding coming from, and then addressing that first rather than looking at it and going like, holy crap, what's the nastiest, you know, this is the nastiest thing that I see, so I need to address this first. So with the massive bleeding, there are several tools. This is probably one of the areas where you have the ability to have the most tools in your toolkit. And so one, the most basic one, is a tourniquet. I really think everybody should be carrying a tourniquet. Really should be carrying a tourniquet on an everyday basis. I mean, I'll, you know, touch on this here at the end, but these skills are good for everyday life as well. And so just carrying a tourniquet on you on a daily basis would just make you more prepared just in case you need it. I mean, if you need a tourniquet, you really need a tourniquet. And you definitely should be carrying one on the trail. Like, you're just playing Russian roulette if you're not. It's just silly. Like I said, they're not that expensive. They don't weigh that much. I mean, honestly, if that many grams is that big of a deal to you, like, you may need to check your priorities. You know, maybe that Strava time isn't that important, is carrying something that could save you or someone else's life. But again, you know, that's my priorities. But so the tourniquet is where you can start. Gauze and a compression bandage. You know, compression bandage is something that seals on itself. So it's kind of like an ACE bandage, but it's sticky and creates some compression. You know, stuffing gauze into a wound. So, you know, not all wounds require a tourniquet. If you have bad bleeding and you throw a tourniquet on it, it's going to stop the bleeding. And so if you don't have any other tools, then just use the tourniquet. And again, like I covered in that tourniquet video that I did, which would be good to check out if you haven't seen it, at bikejames.com, you know, tourniquets for MTB. I had talked about how there used to be some concern about having a tourniquet on a limb for a long period of time, and then that causing more damage than perhaps the injury did, the original injury. And that's been found for the most part to be unfounded, that you can have a tourniquet on a limb for 6+ hours and there be no long-term damage to the limb itself. And so if you're in doubt, like, just get that tourniquet on and leave it on. But again, if you have some of these other tools, so say you have a cut that's bleeding really bad, but maybe it's not tourniquet bad. Okay, well, some of these other tools can help. Things like I said, like, just, you know, simple gauze and a compression bandage. They have quick clot, which, you know, several different types of that, which is, you know, an agent that is designed to clot blood quickly and stop the bleeding faster than normal. You also have something known as an Israeli bandage, which is a compression bandage with the quick clot already in it. And so that's a really good option as well, kind of the two-in-one there. So those are some basic tools that you can carry to help with that. So after you've addressed any massive bleeding, the next one is the airway. And you need to make sure that they can breathe as comfortably as possible, okay? So again, we're going on a hierarchy here. You know, first, if they're bleeding badly, they're going to bleed out in a few minutes. You have to address that first. Then you have to look at air, because if they go without oxygen for several minutes, that's also going to start having, you know, really bad long-term effects. And so you need to, you know, check the airway and make sure there's no obstructions. Just make sure they're breathing, right? If they're breathing and they seem to be breathing okay, then, you know, cool. If they're not breathing, then, you know, check to see if there's an obstruction in their mouth. You can tilt the jaw forward. It's like you learn doing CPR. But again, some of these things you also have to be aware. If you're going to start messing with someone's head in that way, you've got to make sure that they don't have head trauma. Okay. I mean, another thing that you can do is get them into the recovery position where they're laying on their side. And so there's, you know, some different things that you can do to help them make sure that they're getting air. If they're not getting oxygen, then that's another thing that they're not going to survive long enough for the help to get there if they can't breathe. But like I said, you need to, if you're going to start moving them and messing with their head, You have to make sure that they don't have any head trauma. And so the head trauma is the H. It's addressed at the end because, again, we're going through the algorithm here, because after the airway, if you assess like, man, I may need to move them to try to help them breathe better, you want to finish the algorithm before you do that. And so after airway, you have respiration. And this is to see if they have any sucking chest wounds. Because again, like puncture wounds are going to be different based on where they're at in the body. So if you puncture a limb, you're going to have massive bleeding. If you puncture in the lungs or the thoracic area, you're going to have some bleeding. But really what you got to be worried about there, like it's a big cavity. And when you're breathing in and you're breathing in air and then it doesn't get back out and you start creating more pressure from that air. So a sucking chest wound can literally suffocate someone because eventually there's so much oxygen and, or, you know, air trapped in the thoracic cavity that they're not able to breathe anymore. Their lungs don't have any room anywhere to go. And so you want to make sure that they don't have a chest wound like that. And so you can use a chest seal. There are chest seals that are specifically for this. You can also use a plastic bag and duct tape, but you want to make sure that you only tape three sides of that if you're doing that, because you need to leave some ventilation so that when they breathe in, the seal that you've made will cover the wound and not allow air to come in. But as they breathe out, it creates a little space and ventilation, and so any air that is trapped in the thoracic cavity there can get out, and that's what you're looking for with any sort of chest seal, whether you're buying one or you're making one yourself. You need some sort of ventilation, not just block it off completely, if possible. There, so that's respiration. Next one is circulation, and circulation is rechecking to see if you missed anything. You need to, go around the body. You need to check to see if there's any other wounds that you missed, or if any tourniquets or any dressings that you've made to stop bleeding need to be addressed again. If the bleeding has started again, just making sure that everything is that you can do, you have done at that point. And this is also the place that you would start CPR if needed. After you've addressed all of these things, because remember, you got to address that they're not going to bleed out. If they've got some sort of obstruction in their airway or something that's making it hard for them to breathe, you want to do what you can to address that. You want to make sure that they don't have any sucking chest wounds, because if you start doing CPR on someone who's got a sucking chest wound, you may be making the situation worse by drawing more air into the thoracic cavity and making it harder for them to breathe. So once you've addressed those things, now if needed, now you can start applying CPR. And like I mentioned, this is also where you want to address the last H, which is head trauma, and also hypothermia. So you'll see it sometimes with two H's at the end, or the H can have a double meaning. But head trauma is, really it's something that you're going to want to assess early on in the situation. It's one of these things like, if you've gotten to the end and you haven't thought about this yet, now's the time to think about it. But generally speaking, one of the first things that you want to do, especially with mountain biking, is assess what happened and was there head trauma. Because you do not want to move someone that has had a brain injury or a spinal injury. You can definitely make the situation much, much worse by doing that. I remember that was one of the hardest things when I was there when one of my riding buddies broke his neck, is we couldn't do anything for him. He was laying there on the ground in a crumpled, mess where he landed, but you couldn't move him. I mean, it was just too dangerous to move. And if we had, he probably would have died. And so just knowing that you cannot move someone that has had a head injury or a spinal injury, or, if you absolutely have to for like safety purposes or something like that, then it has to be a priority as far as trying to stabilize and minimize movement in that area and overall. So, checking for head trauma and also hypothermia. Now, this was a new one to me. I did not really understand this until I got into this part of, the mountain bike warrior quest here. And that is how the body can have trouble staying warm after massive bleeding. And so you need to cover them up and keep them warm, even if you're in a hot environment. This is one of those things that you would think like, oh man, it's the middle of summer, it's hot outside, you know, someone's had some massive bleeding, I've got them all patched up, we're waiting for the help to get here, we're all good, and I'm done. And it's like, no, you need to cover them up. You need to keep them warm, because it takes energy for your body to create heat, and your body doesn't have the energy to create heat because it's trying to deal with the trauma of the situation and the loss of blood. Your body also uses blood to help, you know, regulate heat, and so you've lost some of that, and it's makes that harder. So this is where those little aluminum solar blankets come in handy. Again, I used to think they were kind of a gimmicky little thing, but they are a very important part of your trauma medicine kit. I guess not trauma medicine, but your emergency kit for dealing with trauma is a solar blanket, or you know, something to keep them warm while you're waiting for the help. And so that's it. Like, it's not that complicated. And when you think about it, it makes sense, right? We need to make sure they don't bleed out, because that's the thing that can happen the fastest. We need to make sure that they can breathe, because oxygen is super important. The next thing that they're not going to be able to last very long without. Need to make sure that they're able to breathe without sucking air into the lung, or, you know, the thoracic cavity, and making things worse. Just checking things and making sure that you've got everything addressed. And along the way, you're assessing head trauma, making a call on, you know, whether you can move them. So again, if someone's had head trauma, you wouldn't necessarily want to have them roll over to the side and get into the recovery position for, breathing easier. But if they're not, right, then that may be something that you can do. So you're going to just have to use this to figure out along the way, you know, what can I do at each one of these steps? But after you've assessed the situation and taken the needed actions at each step, you're now ready to decide on the next course of action, which is either to stay put and wait for the help to arrive, or to try to move them to help. And so again, like, you know, I was out when a buddy of mine broke his wrist. He actually broke his other wrist when he was out riding with me, and he said that you were the only common denominator. So I must be his bad luck charm. But when he broke his wrist, right, that was one of those situations. He went down hard, broke his wrist. And I didn't know this stuff at the time, but you know, I'm thinking about, okay, you're assessing the situations. All right, you know, it didn't look like he hit his head. He's not bleeding. Ooh, his wrist is jacked up. That doesn't look right. You know, we don't need to sit there and wait, call for help and have someone come medevac him out, right? We can get him out of there. And so at that point, we made the call that we're going to help you get out of here. We're going to help carry your bike and get you out of here, and then point you in the right direction and have you walk the rest of the way while we finish the trail, because we told you not to try and roll down that thing in the snow, and you didn't listen to us and you busted your wrist. So anyways, it was one of those funny situations like that. But the, you know, dude, riding buddies can be the harshest on each other, right? It sounds cruel. Like, somebody's got a busted, broken wrist, just sending them off on their own to like, go here, there's a, over there, we'll meet you over there, just walk that way. But we knew that, you know, he was going to make it. It wasn't anything he really needed to do besides just push his bike with his good hand. But yeah, we can be super ruthless on each other, in some situations, but, yeah, it's what makes it fun. That's brothers are always hardest on each other. But anyways, my point is that, you know, just because someone's had a traumatic injury and breaking a bone or something is a traumatic injury, that doesn't mean that the only option is to just, you know, sit there and wait for help. It might be, right? But if you go through the situation and you assess, like, all right, man, like, we can move you, we can get you out of here, let's go get you some help, then that may be the call. But you gotta go through the steps, right? And make sure that you're making the right call, that you're not trying to move someone who really doesn't need to be moved, and that it would be a better idea to just sit tight, keep them stable, and wait for the help to arrive. Like I mentioned before, these skills are also valuable in your everyday life. Okay, like, you could come across a car accident. Odds are pretty high that you're going to come across a car accident and be there before the first responders are. and, you know, instead of just rolling by and looking at the situation, you know, would you be able to help? Like, if you recognize that someone was not doing well from that car accident, would you be able to offer some sort of help? Or would you just be in the line driving by, looking at it, going like, oh man, that looks terrible. I wish I could do something. Right? Or even just like bad accidents at home that require more than a Band-Aid to fix. You know, like I mentioned, I mean, if you nick an artery, I mean, even just like a kitchen accident, you know, like a really just, you know, one in a million kitchen accident with a knife, and you nick an artery, you can bleed out before help can get there, or before you can get to help. And especially depending upon where you live, right? If you live in the country and the nearest hospital is, you know, 20, 30 plus minutes away, and it's going to take them that long to get to you, you don't want to be in a situation where you can't help stabilize someone in your own home, and you've got a loved one who's sitting there bleeding out in front of you because you don't have a basic tourniquet and some basic training on how to help in this situation. So these things are super valuable skills, not just on the trail, but in everyday life. So, you know, remember, being the MTB warrior, it means having the skills to bring the others back, which includes being able to bring yourself back if needed too, right? Like, the life you save may be your own. And the medical side of things is an important part of the skill set that we need to develop that goes beyond just the bike. So to wrap things up, I'm going to end with a quote from Miyamoto Musashi, his Book of Five Rings. This is one of my favorite quotes these days. I love this one. It's funny because, again, I read this book several times, you know, probably a dozen or more times, and this quote didn't jump out to me until the last time that I was reading through this. And it is, force yourself to develop the skills needed to become the warrior you define yourself to be. I mean, really, that sums it up. Like, who do you think you are? Like, who do you define yourself to be? Now, do you really have the skills to be that person? Or are you just like, you know, oh, I feel good thinking I'm this kind of person? Do you really have what it takes to be that kind of person? And there's always skills that you need to work on to develop, to become better in all aspects of life. So, you know, and I like, it's force yourself, right? Some of these things are not fun. They're not as fun to think about, but you need to force yourself to develop these skills, all right? That's the idea. So it's my favorite quote these days here. So yeah, wrapping up, be sure to visit bikejames.com. You can sign up for my newsletter. And when you do that, you're going to get a great free isometric workout program. And if you like that, then get the Atomic Strength Training Program. It is the only isometric workout program designed by a mountain biker for the demands of mountain biking. And it is really that foundational piece of strength training that so many riders are missing out on because we just don't appreciate what isometric training can do. So if you haven't listened to my podcast on isometrics for mountain biking and why it's important, and you know, be sure to check that one out. And then also visit pedalinginnovations.com to learn more about the Catalyst pedal. That is the pedal that I created. It is the world's only double pressure point pedal. So one of the things that I've realized is it's not the foot position, right? It's not midfoot or forefoot. It is how many pressure points are you using to apply force and pressure into the pedal. And your small pedals, clipless pedals, flat pedals, they're too small to allow a double pressure point into the pedal. So you only can have one pressure point, which is typically the ball of the foot. And so the Catalyst pedal is long enough to connect the front and the back of the arch. And so now you're able to apply pressure through both ends, which means you have a double pressure point system. And it's that double pressure point system that unlocks the magic, right? So it's not a matter of riding in more of a midfoot position or being on clipless and moving your cleats to the middle or anything like that. Like, those are better, right? It's definitely a better position for your foot to be in than being perched on the ball of your foot, which is a very unnatural position for your body to be in that context. But the Catalyst pedal allows that double pressure point system that will, you know, create stable forces going into the pedal, you know, get rid of aches and pains, and really just allow your foot maximum stability and performance, which everything begins with the foot. Okay, if your foot is unstable, your foot is underperforming, then the rest of your body is going to struggle and have to compensate for that as well. So unleash your foot and you're going to unleash the rest of your skills and fitness and everything else that you work so hard for off the bike, and allow you to really express it on the bike as well. So that's going to do it. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast. Remember, check out Mountain Man Medical. Sign up for their free lesson on the March algorithm. He does a really good job of going through it in more detail and giving you some more ideas on what you can do at each step there. But at least, you know, got you guys thinking in this direction some, and hopefully spurred some of you guys to get a little more curious and start looking into it more, because that's what we need, man. We need more MTB warriors on the trail who are ready to help if called upon, rather than people who unfortunately would probably like to help but just end up standing around hoping that someone's going to come along that can help them with whatever they need. We need fewer of those people and more of the warriors. So that's going to do it for now. Like I said, hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast, and I will talk to everybody next time.